What Really Happened with your host, Mike Rivero. The history the government hopes you never learn. Here is your host, Michael Rivero.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show today. Hang on just a second. There we are. Welcome to our show today. It is Friday, May 26, 2017 here. Thank goodness it's Friday. It's also the start of the Memorial Day weekend. And that, of course, means we're going to remember all the millions who have died in America's wars around the world for the benefit of oil companies and so forth and so on. And, of course, the celebrations take the form of heading on down to that shopping mall and maxing out the plastic on the Memorial Day sales and drinking copious amounts of beer and so forth and so on. But in all seriousness here, I do think that it behooves us all to really take a moment at some point during the coming weekend to really think about what Memorial Day means, what war means, what it has cost the people, what its real benefit has been, and especially with our sadder but wiser knowledge from the past several years, to really look at why these wars happened in the first place, who benefited, who made the money off of them, who ultimately paid for all of them. So it's a very serious topic, and I don't expect you to spend a lot of time on it, but you really ought to. We'll talk a little bit more about that later in the show. Anyway, the phone lines are open, 800-313-9443. Mike is in our control room, ready to answer the phone when you call on in. The lovely Lady Claire will be joining us in hour number three today. Gilad Osman will be joining us Monday, June 5th. And a quick little reminder, RBN will be broadcasting live on Monday, Memorial Day. We are not taking the day off. We're staying on top of all the news and current events to keep you as fully informed as we can in these very, very chaotic and challenging times. Getting on back to the aftermath of the Manchester bombing attack, Jeremy Corbyn is out there saying something we've all known for a long time. The war on terror is simply not working. And in fact, more and more, especially as evidenced in Syria, the war on terror is really just a cover for yet another intervention into somebody else's country to replace the government, to take over its assets for the benefit of American corporations, and so forth. And each new terror attack simply underscores the failure of these intelligence agencies to do anything about it. Now, of course, we have the media in Britain, like BBC, saying, well, this is the new normal. Just get used to it. It's just going to keep on happening here. But more and more people are saying there is something wrong with this picture. Vast amounts of money are being spent supposedly to protect us from terrorism. We are being told we must surrender our rights to privacy to stop the terror. Terror is still continuing. Let's stop spending the money. Let's get our rights to privacy back. If you really want to stop real terrorism, stop messing about with other people's countries. Of course, we know a lot of terror is actually false flag terror. In fact, I think most of it is false flag terror. To get people all riled up and ready to go to war and, oh, those horrible whoever they are, we're coming to get you for that act of terror. And then they say, what? What? We didn't do anything. And then the bombs start falling. Katie Hopkins is out there pointing out the politicians now have hundreds of troops protecting them while telling the general population just keep calm, stay united, go on about your business, go to your jobs, go to the stores, spend money. But who's going to protect the general population from the terror that so many of these governments have just simply allowed to walk across their borders because of this open border global government New World Order agenda? There are all these different competing agendas. They're causing a huge amount of harm. And it does show how badly factionalized the governance of the world has become here. Far from being a global government, it seems to be breaking apart into smaller and smaller little faction groups. Now, Piers Morgan is out there responding to the outrage over the American leak of information about the Manchester bomber. And he says, yeah, that was an annoyance, but really, the issue is all the intelligence agencies in Britain who missed the glaring red flags. This guy's own friends had been calling the terror hotline saying, this guy is dangerous, and apparently he was not being watched, which raises the possibility that he was some kind of an intelligence asset that was put into play when they needed a spectacular bombing to scare the British people into supporting Theresa May, or scare the British people into saying, yes, we don't need any encryption here, just look at everything that we're doing, or to scare the British people into saying, yes, let's get back into that war in gosh darn Syria. And we know there have been so many false flags throughout history. There's actually a list of something like 47, 48 false flag hoaxes that are officially admitted to, where governments have come back and said, yeah, we did this. Boy, we sure fooled you, didn't we? And I assume for every one false flag that's officially acknowledged, there are probably anywhere between 10 and 100 that still remain officially classified. And anybody talks about them, oh, it's just another tinfoil hat-wearing kook conspiracy wacko. Don't pay attention to them. All right, we're going to do a shout-out now to our on-air affiliates who are just now rejoining our network. Very alarming situation here where apparently hospitals across Great Britain are being told to be ready for another major incident following the Manchester attack. And again, it always seems very odd that the government seem to know a terror attack is imminent, but they just can't figure out who's doing it, where it's going to happen, what time it's going to happen, but by golly, they know it's coming. It does feel like a manufactured operation. Now, there's been another terror attack. This one appears to be genuine, but again, you never know. But down in Egypt, 26 Coptic Christians were killed, and another 26 were injured. Terrorists were shooting at Christians on a pilgrimage to the Anba Samuel Monastery near the city of Minya. And apparently between 8 and 10 heavily armed terrorists surrounded the bus and trucks before opening fire and slaughtering what are being described as the unarmed Christian martyrs. There are way too many people in this world who think violence is cool. And I don't know if you've been following along my show or my website for very long. I'm definitely opposed to violence. I think violence represents a failure of any kind of negotiating process to resolve one's differences peacefully. But then again, because war is such a moneymaker for certain parties, they're going to come on in where people are trying to negotiate and muck things up. The arms manufacturers love war. The bankers love war. Politicians and economists who've gotten their nations into an absolutely horrific mess love war. At least it's a distraction. Now, we have another story over here from USAWatchdog.com. Still no proof of Trump-Russia collusion. And they're talking about how former CIA Director John Brennan testified on Capitol Hill and saying, I don't really know if there's a collusion. We don't have it. And basically it's saying there is still is no proof. And it keeps going over and over and over again. We're investigating Russian collusion. Do we have proof? No, we don't have proof. It almost reminds me of the original Saturday Night Live, when Chevy Chase would come on hosting their faux news update, and it was always starting with the same headline, Generalissimo Francisco Franco is still dead. I guess you have to be my age to get the joke on that, but when Franco passed, it was covered up for a very, very long time, and it got to be an international joke. All right, we're going to go ahead and take a phone call. Dave in Hungary, aloha, welcome to the show. What is on your mind?
Hi, Mike. I'd like to real briefly give a shout-out to a very brave Kuwaiti national who saved my life and probably some lives of my troops in a minefield in Kuwait a long time back. I was commander of a U.S. contingent on Failaka Island, which is a small piece of desert about 20 kilometers offshore Kuwait City. 1991, we were working with a French engineer team to collect up some of the abandoned Iraqi equipment. And the place was saturated with unexploded munitions. The biggest hazard were cluster bomblets that both the British and our Air Force had dropped. Ours were fairly easy to avoid. The bomblets were about half the size of a beer can. they were cylindrical. But the British and Russian made stuff was almost impossible to see. They're about the size of golf balls, around the same color as the dust in the surrounding area. Anyway, I got word to pick up some radar equipment at the south end of the island one day. I took a squad down to the location equipment was supposed to be, and it was almost as dark as night. It was midday, but Falaka Island was right in the plume of the smoke from the Bergan oil fields, which were on fire. And so we couldn't see much. It was like thick smoke, and the sun was obscured. And we had these munitions lying all over the place. It wasn't a happy situation. I had my flashlight on. I saw something moving out ahead of me. And I put the light on it. It's a small calico kitten. And there's a tribe of cats out on the island. I guess they belong to the inhabitants of the fishing village out there that the Iraqis
have driven out. Dave, I'm going to need you to speed this up. I'd like to hear the end of the story, but I do need you to sort of get to the point.
All right. If we hadn't seen the cat, we would have stepped on one of the mines. We spotted the cat the next morning. We adopted her, and I was commander, so I inherited her. She lived until 2005. On Memorial Day, can I ask you to give a shout out for that? I'll give your screener the link to the newspaper article on it.
Yeah. If you'll do that, and we'll do a link to whatreallyhappened.com.
I haven't had much left with your email. I'm going to call your screener again. Let him know that I talked to you. I'll give them the details. This is written up in Kuwaiti and U.S. newspapers.
Okay, you don't need to call him in again. When I say goodbye, he will pick up this call and get the information from you, okay? All right.
Very good. Thanks for honoring a veteran.
All right, well, you got it. Definitely, that's what this weekend and that's what Monday is all about here. So, Mike, if you get that information from Dave, we'll look into it. Interestingly enough, we are now starting to hear calls for a real investigation into the murder of Seth Rich. From Congressman Blake Farenthold is saying this really does need to be looked at, and it absolutely does. I mean, there are so many bizarre problems with this whole investigation here. Let me get at my little list here that's going on down of all the problems. Okay, here we have Seth Rich. It's supposed to be a botched robbery. Seth Rich's phone, watch, wallet, and apparently he was wearing a gold necklace worth $2,000. That was not stolen either. His laptop was seized by the police, and following the revelation that it seemed to indicate contact with WikiLeaks, apparently the police are now saying it's gone missing. Okay. The body camera footage of the responding officers has vanished. It just goes on and on. Nobody was questioning any of the witnesses in the area. Nobody went over and looked at the security camera footage at the bar where he'd been. We have D.C. police officers claim they were being told to stand down. There's something really rotten going on here. And by the way, while we're talking about mysterious deaths and disappearances and everything, has anybody seen Brian Pogliano alive recently? I mean, he has now missed two congressional subpoenas to testify. And as far as I can tell with the web searches, nobody has seen him. For all we know, he could be sleeping with the fishes. And he certainly had a lot of information. He got an immunity deal. And then after the immunity deal, he still pled the Fifth Amendment. And as far as I can tell, he's missing. I think it's time for a wellness check. I'd at least like to verify he's still alive, or maybe it's time to put him on the dead bodies list. Now, apparently, there has been an attempted, failed, overseas cyber attack against the computers of the Trump Organization. And the FBI is investigating it. Apparently, they've talked to President Trump's sons, Don and Eric. And it's all very hazy where this all came from, whether it's a real genuine hack attempt, or somebody is trying to simply blur the landscape because there's so much going on about hacking and who's doing what. But there is a story that has come on out. This is over at Circa. And declassified memos are showing that, yes, indeed, the FBI illegally shared spy data on Americans, that's you, with private parties. This is not just a question of NSA getting data and unmasking people within other branches of the government. The FBI, when they're getting information, they're spying on you, violating your Fourth Amendment right to privacy, they're giving the data to private parties. Okay. Anyway. Now, what this means with the revelation is that Comey lied to Congress. He was under oath. He lied to Congress when he said that the FBI was not sharing any spy data with inappropriate parties. So, again, it's a lie. Now, here's where it gets a little bit tricky. House Oversight Committee Jason Chaffetz has asked the FBI for all of Comey's memos, notes, summaries, recordings, in regards to the ongoing Russia probe. And this would presumably include any memos that involved political pressure put on Comey to alter the investigations, which Comey testified under oath had not happened. The FBI is refusing to hand it over. And the reason they're doing that is they're saying, well, there's a special counsel now, and the special counsel takes precedent, and so they're going to get the information, and that is why we're withholding it. And, of course, Chaffetz has come on back and said, well, our investigation complements the special counsel. We are, in fact, operating outside their jurisdiction. They do not have jurisdiction over us, so just make an extra copy and send it to us. So the war of words is going back and forth, but already we're seeing a classic pattern of the special counsel, which is to scoop up all the evidence and lock it away so that nobody else can look at it. That's what the Warren Commission did back during the JFK assassination. Everybody was finding all this evidence of conspiracy and multiple shooters, and the Warren Commission came on in and said, well, we've got the authority of the federal government. Give us all the evidence. Give us the Mannlicher Carcano. Give us all the lab test results. And they scooped it all up, brought it back to Washington, D.C., so that nobody could actually look at it for themselves, and then they spun that tale, that fairy tale about the crazed lone nut assassin in the book Depository. And that's very often what these special counsels or high-level investigations are about. They're not really investigations. They're part of the cover-up mechanism. Now, a lot of focus is starting to come on to Jared Kushner. And he's considered a person of interest in the FBI's Russia probe. And one of the reasons that this is going on is because apparently Jared Kushner hid dozens of meetings with Russians from his application for his top secret security clearance. Now, Kushner's lawyer is saying he simply forgot, you know, I meet so many people. But it seems rather interesting, given that this is a witch hunt against Donald Trump, they seem to be focusing on his son-in-law an awful lot. Now, Trump has delegated a lot of authority and management of programs to Jared Kushner, which has raised a lot of eyebrows, and a lot of people who know Jared Kushner are saying he's really not capable of handling these tasks. So there may be an effort underway to basically pull him back. And it's a very, very complex issue. I think a lot of people are very concerned that Jared Kushner is functioning as Netanyahu's voice inside the White House, and they would perhaps like to see Kushner made a little bit more distant. But the sheer volume of the infighting that is still going on inside the White House and around the White House this many months after the election is an area of concern. And we ought to be concerned about it. All right, we're going to take a break for commercials. We'll be right back with more phone calls. Hello, hi, America. Welcome back to the show here. And I guess we're getting into Memorial Day fluff mode here. I'm looking at Fox News, and they're doing a thing about looking back at President John F. Kennedy. We're coming up on his 100th birthday, and they're going to make a big deal about it. He was a very important president in a lot of different ways, and we do know he was assassinated because he tried to change so many things here. All right, we're going to go back to the phones here. Steve in California, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
The opportunity, the privilege yesterday of hosting for John, and I opened up the show, and actually pretty much the entire show was based on an article I had here in front of me called ER Surgeon at Seth Rich's Hospital Says His Gun Wounds Were Not Fatal. And I kind of broke down the whole information on this article here, all the wounds and everything, broke it down. About 3 o'clock in the morning, I kind of woke up and said, geez, that something else didn't make sense. I pointed out all the irregularities. With my experience working in ICU for 23 years, I can tell you that the protocols and the rules of that ICU and that hospital did not exist that day when Seth Rich was a patient. And I pointed out all the irregularities. But I did a little homework this morning. I called over to the hospital, Washington Hospital Center, did a little investigation there, trying to know more about the hospital. It is a level one trauma center, which means it gets the big stuff, the shootings, everything you can think of. It gets all the good stuff, the traumas. It's a 926-bed hospital, and this is what kind of blew me away, is normally most ICUs, trauma centers like this, have five different ICUs that are broken down into medical, surgical, cardiac, neuro, and newborn ICU called a NICU. This hospital has 8 ICUs, pretty big hospital, 926 beds. I tried to find out from HR. They didn't answer the phone, and I couldn't leave a message. I wanted to find out more of what the total number of beds were available in their ICU, just kind of figure out more about what they do, and I couldn't find that out. So based on my just a guesstimate of hospitals I've worked out of that size, you're looking at probably 45 or more beds in all 8 ICUs total, probably 45 or more. Pretty good size ICU. So broken down really well. But the point I wanted to make was these ICUs, the first thing when we get a trauma in, and I don't care if they're not conscious and they can't, you know, give you any clue what their wishes are, they have no medical bracelet, they are considered a full code. They're a full code. And that's all there is to that. So his code status would have been as a full code. 27-year-old male coming in as trauma gunshot, he would have been a full code. He was not being monitored, I'm being told here in this article. So they're saying basically they just bring him into an ICU, then shove him off to the OR, do a surgery, give him a little bit of blood, and then they'll do a recheck on it. I mean, they did everything wrong that I could see. The medications he was on are wrong medications. He was hypovolemic. He needed a lot more blood than he had. He only got 2 units, and it boosted him up to a 20. And as I said before, a normal hematocrit on a male would be between 44 and 54%. Now, they had a lot of blood on order for him, so they could have given it. They didn't give it. They had FFP, which is fresh frozen plasma. They didn't give that. That's helping with your clotting factors. And the last hematocrit they did take showed a 24. As I said before, you get about a 3% boost with each unit of blood, so his hematocrit should have been much higher. And it wasn't. He should have been at 26. So either 24, he's either still bleeding, or it's we would call it as a dilutional blood. And he did receive a lot of IV fluids, which might have diluted it down a little bit. But he was on this medication, as we all understand. You remember Michael Jackson, when he died of propofol. He was on a propofol drip. This is one drip you do not want to use on a patient that's had a gunshot wound to the abdomen. This affects blood pressure greatly. Affecting blood pressure also affects perfusion of blood throughout the body. Another discrepancy I saw was he also was on a fentanyl drip, which is a big-time narcotic. They did everything wrong on this. And another thing I thought was very interesting I was looking at was the hospital was swarmed with law enforcement officers. Now, when we get these gunshots,
okay,
when they come in, we make YouTube.
Steve, yes. Okay, we're going to do a commercial break. Do not hang up. I want you to just pick up the story when we come back from these words from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
Got it.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're talking with Steve in California about the many irregularities surrounding the murder of Seth Rich. And the murder, the official murder report is blank. They've got the time and location only. They're withholding the ballistics report. They won't tell us what caliber bullets were used. It's all just very obviously a cover-up and a hush-hush. So Steve, drawing from his previous expertise, is talking about what was going on in the ER based on this information leaked out by a doctor who was there when it was all coming down. So you were talking about how the whole place was just flooded with law enforcement officials, which sounds like, you know, they're breaking the sterility of the ICU at the very least. Steve, are you there?
Pardon?
I said, to pick up your story about all the law enforcement people who were just around.
Yeah, they're swamped. You know, when they come in, there's no name with them usually. They're just, they're not even called John Doe's. They're just a number. And so nobody should have known who he was by name and what his position was. But it was interesting to say that the ICU, the day he arrived and the day he died, place was sworn with police officers, and normally you just see two officers that come to take a look and make a little report and leave because there's nothing they can do. They can't talk to the patient because he was intubated. He was on a mechanical breathing machine.
Okay, so, well, hang on. Two seconds. There are a couple of things we need to take into account. First of all, Seth Rich was still conscious when the responding officers got there, and he may have identified himself to them. Plus, contrary to the story of a robbery, he still had his wallet, which meant he was carrying his ID.
Okay, well, that's true. Well, they probably, my guess is they intubated him. They intubated him in the ICU and took him over to OR to do the surgery because under the anesthesia, he would have had to be intubated. There's no way they could bag him. So he would have been intubated either in the ER or actually early on the ER, the ICU, or he would have been shortly after he got to the operating room. They could have done that. Anesthesia could have done that. But there should have been no reason to have that many police officers. And another red flag that I saw was, it says here the attending physician was allowed to stay in the room and a few nurses. Everyone else was kicked out of the ICU. Now, that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. You're not going to kick everybody out of the ICU because you've got patients in each room and every nurse has their job to take care of a patient because you are in the ICU, intensive care unit. So they're basically telling me they kept a doctor and a couple nurses in Seth Rich's room and they cleaned out the entire ICU. All you nurses go out in the hallway. Nobody can take care of their patients for however long that could have been. That's not going to happen. I can tell you right now, ICU nurses are very dedicated to their job. They're dedicated to their patients. They are patient advocates. They're the top notch.
Yes.
ER, they're top notch. And you don't push them around and tell them you're not going to take care of your patient for the next 2 hours because people die in the ICU when you don't tend to their needs. That's why they're in ICU. So that's a red flag right there to say we kicked everybody out and that's cool. That is not protocol. Everything about this case is like non-existent protocol and rules. This is amazing to see this. Now, one thing you mentioned about the charting and all that other stuff, we went to digitalized charting back in 2014. Every hospital had to comply, a new rule that everything is digitalized now. So all my charting goes on a computer.
That came in with Obamacare.
Yes. And that was the new rule for some kind of funding. You had to do this. And I was always suspicious of this whole digitalized thing because we see how much cyber crime there is and it's how easy it is to get into systems and find information. Or alter it. And it's much easier to alter a paper document. Actually, it's easier to alter the digital copy than it is to do the paper because it usually there's a carbon behind the orders. So it presses through, and you can see what somebody else wrote or somebody scribbled out. So that's a red flag right there. But to kick everybody out of the ICU, everything about this has legs.
Yes.
Mike, this has legs. And I'm not sure why it's taken almost a year from the death date of Seth Rich to now somebody breaking loose and opening up and saying all these things. I'm not sure why it's taken this long because any junior Columbo would have known, Seth Rich, okay, what's his background? He works at the DNC, he's a staffer. Oh, and then we have this big leak that takes down Hillary and hurts her numbers and her campaign. Geez, wonder where that could have come from. This is junior detective work.
Yes.
Now, I'm not sure why it's taken almost a year now for somebody, this story to actually break loose, because I saw this a long time ago, and I wondered why nobody went after this. DNC staffer, dead, mysterious, gunned down, wasn't robbed, but they keep pushing the robbery story, but they left the belongings behind.
Well, it doesn't. I went through the same thing back in 1994 with Vincent Foster, where the available information about the body and the location and everything didn't line up with the suicide, but it was pushed suicide, 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 suicide. If you've got a different opinion, you're wearing a tinfoil hat. But with regard to Seth Rich, the issue here is they're trying to keep this from being investigated or going public. They're trying to shout it down because you've got Kim.com saying that Seth Rich was the DNC leak. You've got the Russian embassy in Great Britain saying that Seth Rich was the DNC leak. You've got Julian Assange implying Seth Rich was the DNC leak. You've got Seth Rich's members of his extended family saying he was the leak. If it comes on out that, yes, Seth Rich was the leak, it does a couple of things that are really, really bad. The corporate media has invested what little remains of their credibility in pushing the story of Russia hacking the DNC, and if that comes collapsing down, that's not going to be good for the corporate media. Plus, it's going to lead to more attention on just what Hillary was doing. And again, I think behind the Hillary email server and the Clinton Foundation, there is a huge, huge scandal that would delegitimize the entire United States government. And that's why they're all circling the wagons and just trying to protect this story. Even Hillary's worst enemies do not want this to come on out because they're trying to protect their own jobs and their own position.
Now, this thing stinks. It really does. Like I said, he would have been a full code. And they should have pushed that card in there. He would have been monitored on his breathing, his respirations, his oxygenation, his cardiac rhythm. That's what ICU is all about. I mean, you see it on TV.
Yes.
Those monitors, that's real stuff. And he was hooked up with monitors when he got there because the ambulance service has all that stuff, too. So, you know, none of this makes sense, saying not being monitored and then just doing rounds and finding him, standing over him, and he's dead. This is not how ICUs are run. And this hospital needs to be scrutinized and looked at very closely what happened here. And the chasing out of all the nurses, that was another red flag I thought about it. So you had a doctor and two or three nurses in the ICU in Seth Rich's room, nobody else present. So that's four people you can control and versus a whole bunch of nurses, because normally the nurse ratio is a 1-to-1 or a 1-nurse-to-2 patient ratio. So you cleaned out that ICU where Seth Rich was. You got rid of a lot of potential eyes.
Yes.
To keep an eye or see what the heck was going on. All those police officers pushing everybody out. You know, he was a Joe Blow to them, but evidently he was not. He had a name, and they knew who he was. That's why they had so many officers there, to secure the scene and do their little investigation, whatever they're doing, or making sure that they can control the investigation. Kind of like that movie I spoke about last night with Clint Eastwood, Absolute Power, how they control the investigation and they get the outcome they desire.
Yes.
This thing stinks. And somebody needs to call these hospital officials on the carpet to say, he's a full code, no code was done, what happened here?
I absolutely agree.
I want names, I want to know what's going on here. This, nothing happened as it's supposed to in an ICU.
Okay. And you've raised some very, very, very good points here. And it does look like the original hit was botched. He survived the shooting, and they had to go on in and cowboy him right there in the hospital. The same way that they botched the killing of Lee Harvey Oswald at the Texas movie theater, and they had to have Ruby go into literally the basement of the Dallas police station and cowboy him there to just basically shut him up. It does stink. And that's why Seth Rich is on the dead bodies list. My next question is, where's Brian Pagliano, and is it time to put him on that dead bodies list? Anyway, thank you very much.
One of the other things real quick is that the solution to his problem would have been, if he's on a ventilator, he's not doing well. He needs to be oxygenated, and he can't do it on his own. But the solution, one of the biggest solutions to his problem would have been blood, blood, blood. He needed circulating volume blood for oxygen carrying capacity. And this man did not. They had enough on hold to give it to him, and they never gave it to him. Had they given him the blood that he needed that they had on hold, I looked and did the math on it. He should have had a hematocrit of around 30, 32, I believe. And he ended up having a 24. 32% he would have had they given him all the blood product he needed. And they did not give it. That's a no-no. This is a big-time no-no here. They screwed up, and they didn't give him what he should have had to give him a heck of a shot of surviving this. So They facilitated his death.
Yeah, that seems to definitely be it. Anyway, listen, Steve, you've given us a lot of really good information to look at, and you've triggered a whole bunch of other phone calls on the same subject. So thank you very much. We're going to let you go, and we're going to switch over to Glenn in Philadelphia. Glenn, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
All right. Hi, Mike. Yeah, I was like, whoa, hold it. You know, something's rotten in Denmark with Steve's call. And then I hear, okay, now supposedly this information that was leaked by a physician who was there. And I'm thinking, slow down on the sequence of events here. Number one, he wouldn't have gone to the ICU until after the OR. So he would have gone to the trauma suite. He could have been intubated, but if they would have had paramedics as opposed to EMTs, he could have been intubated in the ambulance by paramedics, or he could have been intubated in the trauma suite, and certainly in the OR. So he would, you know, he would have been intubated, you know, probably in, you know, in the trauma suite, if not the ambulance, and then would have gone from the trauma suite to the OR, and then from the OR, you go to post-anesthesia care unit, and then to ICU. So the patient's, you know, checked out and stabilized in the post-anesthesia care unit, and then over to ICU. So would have been fairly stable after surgery before going to the ICU. Now, I don't know about all the information. The one huge problem here is it's one thing for whistleblowers to do whistleblowing on political issues like a Snowden or something like that, but for Steve to be privy to all this information about drugs and lab values and stuff like that, this doctor, whoever, is really, this is a huge break of HIPAA, the Healthcare Information Portability and Accountability Act. That kind of breach could cost him his life, and so hopefully this doctor will be able to remain anonymous. And if this stuff be true, and hopefully the chart isn't lost and these records are found, and some of these questions should be addressable after the fact.
Well, as Steve pointed out, because of Obamacare, all hospital records are now computerized, and it is frighteningly easy to alter or even simply erase a computerized record. In the days of paper records, it was much more difficult to alter them and get away with it. There was a formal process where if you needed to make a change that was legitimate, you would do a single-line strikeout of the erroneous material information, then you would write above the correction and you would sign an initial on it. And one of the very damaging pieces of information that surfaced in the murder of Vincent Foster was an autopsy report that indicated a second gunshot wound to the neck. That had been whited out, and that is absolutely not the correct procedure. Obviously, with computerized records, you can just go on in and take out second neck wound, and nobody's going to be the wiser.
The software probably does sort of a line out equivalent, though, where you have to, you know, it can you know, strike it, and then you have stuff to initial the change. But,
well, that may be
anyway,
on the, that may be on the front end, but that doesn't mean the database itself cannot be directly accessed. I mean, look what Beth Harris found out about the GEMS voting system, you could just go completely outside of GEMS and go into the database with standard database tools and change the records there, and the system that the data was for had no way of knowing.
Right. By the way, the ICU wouldn't be sterile anyway. There's just, you know, ICUs, OR suites, you know, in an operating room is supposed to be sterile or maintain sterile fields in the operating room, but certainly ICU isn't sterile. But anyway, yeah, if something's rotten in Denmark and definitely needs to be investigated, the question is, In our post-truth era here, does anybody anywhere have any guts or care about the truth? I mean, whether it's left or right or, you know, politically or whatever, the one overarching question is just, it seems to be, does anybody give a damn about the truth or have the courage to stand up for it in this society anymore at any level?
Well, we do. You do, obviously. Everybody listening to this show does. The American people do. But obviously within the bowels of power, they're in pure survival mode. And from their point of view, the truth doesn't matter, accuracy doesn't matter, the law doesn't matter, just maintaining control over the people, that is the prime agenda. And because so much of their control is based on having the American people believe in the inherent goodness and trustworthiness of the government, they're in serious trouble right now. where Americans overwhelmingly are starting to see the government as a major problem, that they are not trustworthy, that they are in fact engaged in lies, fraud, and deceptions to rule and control us. That's why the government is losing power over the people. We're starting to turn away and not listen. We certainly just don't believe automatically the way we used to.
Well, when we have politicos who presume to threaten police chiefs and private investigators and throw their, they think that they can just say, go, hey, you stop that, and then everybody's just going to stand down. You know, if I were a police chief and some politico told me, you know, to stand down on something that was clearly within my purview, I'd tell her to go straight back to hell from when she came. Anyway.
Well, again, when you're dealing with a group of people that have a long string of dead bodies behind them, you might want to think about that very, very carefully. And Washington, D.C. is almost literally a city under the siege of this deep state, the narcocracy. Plus there are a lot of CIA assets who are in police departments. That's their cover. And maybe this officer was one of them, and he was given a phone call and say, you're going to get a meeting from somebody. They're going to tell you to stand down, and you're going to nod and say, yes, ma'am, and that will be the end of it. It is a very, very dark mess. Anyway, listen, Glenn.
Have you noticed how much the term deep state has evolved into the vernacular in just the past few months?
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't used as much, and now it's pervasive.
The rock has turned over. Everybody's looking at the little crawly things underneath there and saying, that's interesting. Glenn, we're going to let you go. Take a break for commercials. We'll be back with more phone calls. And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're going to go right back to the phones. Frank in New Hampshire. Aloha, fellow Granite Stater. What is on your mind today?
Good afternoon, Mike. Good to talk to you. Yeah, I can't, after hearing the gentleman with the ICU experience go on about all the inconsistencies and all the problems with the medical procedures, and then hearing you talk about all the problems with the police report and just everything, I mean, not one thing is adding up in this story. And I can't help but think back to, and I'm not sure if you'll remember this, or maybe another caller can call in and help me with this, but some years ago, you'll probably remember, there was, I think he was a CIA contractor who was a whistleblower who had materials in his possession. He was racing down the highway, I think it was somewhere in Texas, Dallas, being chased by the cops. And then they got him pulled over, and this is all caught on video, and the cop just ran right around his door and shot him dead without any provocation or anything. And the guy was like a CIA contractor, and he was about to blow the whistle on something. The point of my call is this. After that, we learned that through other whistleblowers, mainly to independent media, that all these major police departments have hit squads in them. And all I could think about as you guys were talking about all this was that this sounds like, because the police were all over the hospital in a very unusual manner for no real reason. There really shouldn't have been a reason for that much police presence.
That didn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, and of course, he ends up dead in the end because basically everything that could be done wrong was done wrong. And, you know, mysteriously or just accidentally, the guy dies in one of the most advanced hospitals with the most ERs, you know, on a quiet night. It almost sounds like this is just the thought I got when you were talking about it, is that the cops, you know, were sent in to kill this guy, to take him out. And either they were interrupted by a passerby or some kind of other situation, I'm not sure. And then and that's why they basically, were so interested in him at the hospital. And then he ends up dead. And now you've got all the major DNC heads, Wasserman, Schultz, and down in Brazil, all threatening people.
Yes,
I mean, this is obviously a huge cover up, and he was obviously not meant to live to get to the hospital. But he
that was obviously what was going on here. But, you know, if you study the history of the Clintons' Arkansas years, Little Rock, and Larry Nichols has written and spoken a great deal about this, these are the same tactics they used back then. Just go on out, do what they were going to do, fix the records afterwards. Anybody who didn't go along was threatened, or they themselves ultimately were killed. And if you look at the dead bodies list, quite a few of those dead bodies are people who were associates of other dead bodies who weren't going along with the official story, you know, lawyers and so forth and things like that. All right, listen, we need to take a break here. Frank, thank you for the phone call. We're going to take a break for station identification. We've got a lot more phone calls coming on in. We'll be right back. Hello, America. Welcome back to our show. Hour number two. The phone lines are open, 800-313-9443. We got a bunch of calls waiting, but before I get to them, a couple of breaking stories. We reported earlier on how a group of terrorists shot up some Coptic Christians inside Egypt. Egypt has now launched airstrikes into Libya in response to this act of terror and or a false flag to justify this attack. Apparently, Egypt is not saying exactly where they have hit, but Reuters is reporting that there were six locations hit, supposedly jihadi terror training camps near Derna. And so that is now ramping up over there. Again, getting back before the phone calls here, Kim.com raises a very, very good point that really lies at the heart of why they're trying to make this Seth Rich thing go away. The deep state is obsessed about getting rid of Trump or hamstringing him at the very least, because you have all these Clinton-Bush crimes that have been occurring over the last couple of decades, and they were counting on getting a president who would keep the cover-up going on. Now, let me give you a little look back at history. When Richard Nixon started to get into trouble over Watergate, everybody understood the real secret underneath all of that was the fact that there had been a conspiracy to kill President John F. Kennedy that had involved Nixon's associates. And so before Nixon would step down, they got rid of then-Vice President Spiro T. Agnew, who was pretty much a straight shooter, and they got Gerald R. Ford to be Nixon's vice president. So when Nixon finally resigned, Gerald R. Ford became the president. Now, Gerald R. Ford had served on that Warren Commission. He was part of the cover-up. And so when he came on in, the first thing he said was, well, we're just going to issue blanket pardons to everybody. Our long national nightmare is over. Let's just forget all about it. And that basically ended any further digging into what lay behind Watergate, because everybody was scratching their head. Nixon's re-election was a study in foregone conclusions. He won over McGovern by one of the biggest landslides in U.S. election history. So why did they need to burglarize the Watergate Hotel? And then it later came on out that the Democrats had gotten photos of the three tramps at Dealey Plaza, very clear, close-up photos, and they were either going to use them to wreck Nixon's campaign, or they were going to blackmail him with it. And that's why E. Howard Hunt led that raid, because he was in one of those photos. So what we're seeing right now is the continuation of this 30-year-long narcocracy, the Clintons and the Bushes and all of their associates in the CIA, and they were expecting that this year they would either have another Bush or another Clinton in the White House to make sure that everything stayed undercover. And now they've got Donald Trump. And Donald Trump doesn't seem to be all that hot to continue these horrible cover-ups. In fact, I think Trump probably is not yet aware of just how bad it really is. And that's why the DNC and Hillary and all these people are in such a panic, because a case like Seth Rich could break it all wide open. The cover-up is just this very thin, frayed piece of gauze, and you pick it one thread, it's all going to start to unravel. All right, let's get back to the phones here. Charlie in Los Angeles, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Well, what's on my mind, Mike, is this story has a lot of things in common with other stories over the years. All the holes in it, nothing comes out. It's all, can't get a straight answer from anybody. And so that makes me try to put that story in the possible fake story folder. I'm not saying it is, but it's a possibility, because they want to control leaks. And if they can tell you a fake story about this guy who was murdered for leaking, that changes people's behavior in a hurry. I'm not saying it is, but I put it in that possibility because it's just, there's no clean answer to anything. And so it's not, is there, what about the police report? He accessed the real copy of the police report. Does anybody have that?
Well, somebody,
I'm just saying it.
Somebody leaked out the original response report where it said that Seth Rich was still conscious and breathing when the responding officers arrived. The officially released report on the murder is effectively blank. It just has the time and place that he was shot. The ballistics report is being withheld. They're not telling us what caliber bullets he was shot with because from what that ER doctor is leaking, it sounds like he was shot with a small caliber weapon. And it was a botched hit. So that's why they had to clean up the mess inside the hospital. But again, there are so many items in this whole case that are at variance with the standard normal operating procedure that it does call attention to itself. Another good classic example, again, going back to the Vincent Foster case, which is what messed up my life, was this idea where they came on out and said, well, it's obviously a suicide, let's stop there. When the legal procedure in this country, because so many homicides are covered up by making them look like suicides, that when an unattended death body is encountered, homicide is the first assumption, and suicide must be proven. And none of the normal steps and procedures to prove that it was a suicide were ever carried out. They just said, it's a suicide, we've got something that looks like a suicide note. And that, of course, turned out to be written in two different hands. It was a fraud. And again, when it is this far outside normal procedure, you know there's a cover-up going on. We're going to do a quick shout-out to our on-air affiliates who are just now rejoining our network. We're still talking about Seth Rich and the very obvious indications that he was the leaker of the DNC emails, that he was murdered because of it, and that the entire DNC, Hillary, and corporate media are in a panic. Because if it does come out, if there's any other confirmation that Seth Rich was the leaker, then this whole Russia hacked the DNC story collapses, and with it what remains of the credibility of the Democratic National Committee, the corporate media, and even those institutions of government that just said, oh yeah, we're going to go along with that, it's a good story. Okay? Did we lose Charlie? Okay, all right, we're going to switch over to Rob in Chicago. Aloha, Rob. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Afternoon, Mike. Two things, one of which on the, just on a side thing that people aren't talking about with this, with our economy, how bad it is. People think, oh, it's not really that bad. Well, when you look at the underpinnings of our economy, any economy, you always have day-to-day life living economy things that keep a country moving.
Yes.
No matter what, people have to eat, people have to get gas, people have to, it's the only those things that are keeping our country going. The only thriving things are a few people that have a little bit of money to go out to dinner, but again, the thriving part is not there.
No, it absolutely isn't. I mean, we've got one quarter of Americans cannot even pay their regular monthly bills. And, you know, our manufacturing is down. Nobody wants our GMO agriculture. Everybody is screaming that this Saudi arms deal is really good for the U.S. economy. It's going to create jobs. And that's a very sad state of affairs where the only way we can get jobs in this country is by manufacturing the machinery of mass death for other parts of the planet. And there's no question our economy is in serious, serious trouble. And going all the way back to the Bill Clinton administration, they've been trying to get by boosting up the stock market, pouring in all kinds of money in the stock market, running those Dow numbers up to the ceiling and saying, see, the economy is good. Really, the stock market is just up there soaring again. And, well, you know, if you're going hungry and jobless, it's got to be your fault. You shouldn't blame the government and the money junkies for it. And nobody's really addressed these underlying issues. First and foremost, the hideous drain on the gross domestic product by all of these wars on all of these countries. We are literally in a wartime economy. Nobody wants to admit it, but you can see it all around. If you go back and you look at photos of ordinary life inside America at the height of World War II, you'll see exactly the same symptoms. The pavement is cracked, the metals are corroded, everything's run down, and there are rust streaks all over everything. It was just neglected and allowed to decay, and then after the war was over, they came back in and they sort of cleaned things up. And that's what they're going through here right now. The big problem that we have, and the Oroville Dam underscores this, these wars were supposed to be over in 2008. And here we are in 2017. They've gone on way too long. They've taken up far more money and resources. And that's why we're in trouble. And, yes, the economy is in a mess. And nobody really seems to want to do anything to get the economy running again. The focus is let's just win the wars. Let's just complete the conquest of the planet. And we'll sort of figure out how to restart the economy after it's all over.
Right. And the thing that, like, what we're witnessing now that is going along those lines is that once we go through this, the discovery that's happening of all of this stuff, the people realize, holy cow, my government is not really doing anything to help me or my fellow Americans. It's doing everything to line their pockets and to do this and to do that. And on top of it, when the truth is trying to come out, they will do anything which doesn't, including killing people openly and then covering it up. And quite frankly, the beautiful part that they're doing right now is it's becoming so blatantly obvious to a good portion of the people that they're disintegrating their own. Just like the Communist News Network, just like all the corporate networks are making themselves look like monkeys. I mean, when you see Nancy Pelosi go out there, and she doesn't know the difference between the NRA and one of our intelligence.
The NSA.
The NSA, yeah. I mean, when you have senile people that are in power, that screams, oh, my God, it's time to get the pitchforks and torches, like Sheriff David Clark said. You know, it really is getting that bad. And who knows, maybe they will shoot themselves in the foot enough that they will openly gut themselves and the animal will die itself.
Well, we're approaching the point, and again, this is one of the parallels that I see between the current state of the United States and the Soviet Union just months before it collapsed. The general population has just fed up with the central government. They know they're being lied to. They're not listening anymore. They're turning away. And at some point, the government is simply not going to be able to function because nobody's listening to them anymore. Nobody dares listen to them. We're sick and tired of being made fools of in front of the eyes of the rest of the world, and we're not going to take that chance of being made fools of again.
Exactly. And I see things that are obviously because of you and this network, and we are all very, very aware. We get people coming in, and there's other good networks and works that are out there that are uncovering, actually in Washington trying to uncover the Seth Rich thing and bring that to life. So, the good part is there's quite a few people, good people on this side of the fence. So, we just have to keep the pressure and hold our cool, do what we need to do. And, somewhere along the way, I have a feeling one of the good things is going to pop, but at the same time, we still have to watch out for Trump being exterminated or the
Yeah, we do because, again, that deep state, national security state, whatever you want to call it, right now they're feeling very vulnerable and very scared, and that's why they're really on top of this Seth Rich thing. I mean, look at the way Fox News Network ordered their D.C. affiliate to bury that story about Seth Rich being in communications with WikiLeaks. Look at how they slapped down Sean Hannity. That's a lot of power on display. And again, it was done right in full view of the public, which actually works for us. Because the fastest way to bring down a dictatorship is to force them to act like one where everybody can see it, and that is just what happened.
Exactly. And what my hope is that somebody like Sean Hannity get pissed off enough, and O'Reilly was a fence rider to me, but you know, Hannity, he was a tiptoeer along the way. But you get him, like, and that Dobbs guy, you know, you get some of these people, and then perhaps Jeanine Pirro and Napolitano, you get all of them to come together and form their own network, or just come together and form a giant power source of information and bury this thing.
Well,
bury
it would be, that would be nice, but all of these people are already financially tied up with the deep state, and probably they all realize that going up against the deep state, they could wind up just as dead as Seth Rich. And that may have been more than punishment for the leaking. That may have been the reason for the very obvious hit on Seth Rich to send a message. Remember, Podesta said we're going to make an example of a leaker, and that seems to be why they did such a heavy-handed hit on Seth Rich. It's sending a warning: if you cross us, you will wind up dead. You know, the dead bodies list is just wild-eyed conspiracy theory kookville, but you don't want to wind up on it, so you better behave. I mean, that's the way it seems to be coming on down. Anyway, listen, Rob, got to let you go. Got a bunch of phone calls to get through. Got a lot of news to get through.
Take care.
All right, before the top of the hour and the lovely Lady Claire. So, Mo in Florida, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind? Mo, are you there? Did we lose Mo? Okay, let's go to Jack in Georgia.
Michael, I'm right here.
Oh, right, okay. Here. All right, I couldn't hear you.
Oh, sorry, I was switching phones. I'm sorry. You know, I'll be quick here because I know you're going to a break, but can you hear me okay?
I hear you just fine. Please speak.
Okay, you know, back in when Seth Rich, staying on topic here with the murder of Seth Rich, I think you probably covered this, but do you remember when John Podesta said back in February of 2015, there was one of the WikiLeaks emails where he said we're going to, here's the quote, definitely for making an example of a suspected leaker, whether or not we have a real basis for it, and that there are stiff consequences for leaking. This was not a botched hit, I don't think. I think, you know, this was to send a message, you know, to scare the hell out of anybody that would dare say anything.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. The only reason I say it was botched is because Seth Rich survived to reach the hospital, and that meant he was going to be able to say, hey, these are the guys who shot me. And that's the only part that was botched, was they didn't finish the job right there in the street in front of his house.
Yeah, and it tells you a small caliber weapon. You know, it was a .22 because that's what they use, you know, because you can't, you know, really trace it. .22 is what they use a lot of times in the back of the head. And I think maybe he knew it was coming. Didn't they say something about there was marks on his, he had knuckle marks?
Yeah, there was a fight. Yeah, there was definitely a fight on that one.
Yeah.
And also in the case of a .22, that's realistically the only caliber that you can have an efficient suppressor on. Forget about what you see in movies and TVs where this guy's got this cannon and he sticks a can on the front and it just makes when you fire it. That's not real. That's absolutely not real. The function of a suppressor is not to prevent the gunshot from being heard. The function of a suppressor is to make it hard for witnesses to tell where the shot actually came from by breaking up the shock wave into multiple waves.
You're so right, Michael. You know, not everybody's kind of seeing what you've gone through for years, but you know, I got one other thing to ask you. Have they started the crowdfunding for you guys, you and Claire, moving back?
No. That was started by somebody else, and I asked them not to do that because, you know, we're still heavily dependent on people supporting our work here at WhatReallyHappened.com, and we were in the middle of a fundraising drive for RBN, and I couldn't bring myself to just beg for more. But obviously Claire and I do want to get back to the mainland. We want to get to someplace with much lower rent because we're just being bled to death here. We've turned into Hawaiian sourdoughs. We're sour on Hawaii, but we don't have the dough to leave right now. And again, back when Trump won the election, and it was looking like maybe we're going to see the rise of the independent media, that there might be a chance to earn some more money, to pay off some back bills that I would really like to resolve. And get us off this island back to someplace with low rent, maybe Indiana where we've got family. But as a result of Trump's victory, I mean, we're now under attack. They're coming after our advertisers. They're hacking our servers. They've literally declared war on us. Everybody who's not part of the corporate media is now being denounced as, you know, in cahoots with Russia. In fact, Podesta is now even saying Sean Hannity is working together with the Russians and so forth. Anyway, listen, we got to take a break for commercials. Thank you very much for the phone call, Mo. We'll be right back after these words from our sponsor. Aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. We're going to take a few more phone calls, then we're going to close the lines because I got a bunch of news to share with you. A lot of breaking stories going on right now. So let's go to Jack in Georgia. Aloha, Jack. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Can you hear me?
I hear you just fine. You're on the air.
Okay, first, congratulations for your show. I have a number of items. First, about the Memorial Day, if JFK was alive today, he would be 100 years old. And it's a day of mourning because for the America we lost.
Yes.
The result of his assassination. The second is the term conspiracy theory. It was a very successful campaign launched by the CIA. It became public after 1967. And there's an interesting book that has come out a couple of years ago. The author is Lance DeHaven Smith. You can check it out at Amazon. It traces the evolution of the history of this campaign, this terminology,
yes,
which is used to shut down, to discredit and ridiculize anyone who questions the...
It was in response to the public doubt about the assassination of John F. Kennedy.
Right, the single bullet and lone assassin theory. It came out and, among other things, he says that... Lyndon Johnson knew about it, but well, he was not part of it, but he kept the secret so as not to diminish the credibility of the government. People would lose all faith in the government.
Well,
so
that's not exactly what happened, I personally did not like Lyndon Johnson, but I have to give him credit for this one case of statecraft, because the original plan for the assassination of John F. Kennedy was to frame Cuba for it, to get public support for a new invasion. This was all after the Bay of Pigs
right.
situation. But Lyndon Johnson knew of the threat that Khrushchev had left behind at the end of the Cuban Missile Crisis. When they pulled the missiles out,
right.
Khrushchev had said, "You invade Cuba again, we launch. There will be no pause. We will launch nuclear weapons." And Johnson knew that that was what was going on. So he knew that if the original assassination plot of John F. Kennedy, if they succeeded in framing Cuba and invaded again, it would result in a nuclear war. So Johnson basically yanked the rug out of all the plotters. He basically gave the military-industrial complex Vietnam to play around in basically recast Lee Harvey Oswald as a crazed lone nut. You ever wonder why they gave him that Mannlicher Carcano rifle, the world's worst shoulder weapon? It was because it was the exact same rifle that was being imported by the shipload into Cuba by Fidel Castro to arm his people with. And you remember that whole thing about the fake Oswald who went to the embassy in Mexico and then was photographed going to Cuba and coming back, even though it didn't look anything like it. They were laying a false trail to say that Fidel Castro had ultimately been behind the assassination of John F. Kennedy. And Johnson basically yanked the rug out from under that in order to avoid a nuclear war with Russia. And history has shortchanged him on that one, mostly because history refuses to acknowledge why Johnson was put in that place, that situation in the first place. So we have to give him credit for that.
Okay, good. I learned something. Look at the latest article by Paul Craig Roberts. He mentions the details of the book. It's Lance DeHaven Smith. He's a professor. And it's something Florida University, and it's a respectable publisher. He has names and all that. He mentions in the book that before 1945, the admission of conspiracy theories in the American academia was very common by the best. But after 1945, with the influence of some people, one was Karl Popper, philosopher, who was the intellectual father of George Soros, and the other one is neocon godfather, the Leo Strauss. With the influence of these two, the conspiracy theory got a bad name.
Okay, you got to wrap up. We're almost at the commercial break.
Okay.
Okay.
Second, I have suggestions for guests for your show. One is Catherine Austin Fitz. She was Assistant Secretary of HUD.
All right, we'll try and get her in there. You can email me the rest of the list here. We're going to have to let you go and take another commercial break.
One more thing.
No, we're out of time. I'm sorry, we're out of time. Okay, we'll be back with the final few phone calls, then we're going to close the lines and get on to some news. We'll be right back. Aloha, America. Welcome back to our show. And I was just looking at downdetector.com, and apparently a lot of the cell phone companies are having all kinds of difficulties all over the mainland. And so maybe it's the pre-Memorial Day weekend increase in traffic. And we know that cable and cell phone companies have not been investing in expanding their infrastructure to match their subscriptions. The lines are often oversubscribed. Spectrum, of course, is still terrible. We are just getting a tiny fraction of the bandwidth that we're supposed to be getting here, but we still seem to be working here. All right, we're going to go back to the phones here. Dave in Nevada, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mike, how you doing? I just wanted to address a kind of disturbing issue that I read about the Meals on Wheels program for seniors.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in relation to our overall spending program in the United States, which is the federal spending budget has been about $1 trillion per year. I don't know how long that's been, but in general, it's been about $1 trillion per year. And at minimum, we spend about $500 billion. In other words, 50% of that $1 trillion on the military-industrial complex per year. And Donald Trump, for whatever you take him for, has requested for more military spending,
mm-hmm.
which is part and parcel, I think, just going on down the line from all the different politicians. They just keep increasing the military spending. What happens is when you increase spending for one program, you decrease for another program. And the annual expenditures on average for food and farming or agriculture has been around 1-2% of that $1 trillion. And so if you do a proportional comparison, it's obscene. And
well,
one of the programs that they're cutting.
First of all, there's a couple of things that you've got a misconception about. When somebody cuts a portion of a budget, or rather increases a portion of a budget, it doesn't automatically mean a cut someplace else. They just go further into debt. And a lot of the people who are complaining about Trump's new budget are saying that it is going to greatly increase the debt, which is absolutely correct. Second, when you talk about a cut, the way you think of a cut is not the way Washington, D.C. thinks of a cut. If you have a budget of $20 for pizza this month, and then next month you have a budget of zero for pizza, that's a cut. In Washington, D.C., the theory is always that funding for various programs is going to increase year after year, somewhat connected with the rate of inflation. So in Washington, D.C., if they have a budget of $20 for pizza this month and the budget for pizza for next month is $20, that's considered a cut because it didn't go up. So you have to be very, very careful. Now, getting on back to the Meals on Wheels, there is a lot of concern that Trump's new budget is, in fact, cutting back on needed services for the most fragile elements of our society. And, of course, the White House is now coming on out and saying that, no, there are going to be no cuts to Social Security, no cuts to Medicare. Frankly, they couldn't cut Social Security anyway. It's already broken in debt. So they really can't do much of anything with that. But the plain fact of the matter is, under this wartime economy and under this predation by Wall Street and the Federal Reserve, our economy is absolutely in a mess, and they're just holding it together with spit and baling wire. And unfortunately, when it starts to come apart, and we are hearing all of these top experts in economics saying it's going to happen sometime this year, we're going to see a lot of suffering of ordinary people, especially those most fragile. And we as Americans are going to have to take it onto ourselves to go on over to these homes where these housebound retired people are and just share what we have with them, because that's the only way that they're going to stay alive. We can't rely on the government anymore. The government wants us to rely on them. They want us to be emotionally dependent on them. They just can't do it anymore. The problem with socialism is ultimately you run out of other people's money, and that's where we are right now. Okay? All right, well, thank you for the phone call, Dave. We're going to let you go and switch over to Fred in Michigan. Aloha, Fred. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Aloha, Michael. Marvelous broadcast.
Thank you.
The deep state regime, there's this fellow, Henry Mackow, M-A-K-O-W.
Yes. Familiar
Have
with
you him. Ever, 21 August of last year, he did an article all about the deep state regime and even published some photographs of them, even one with the previous president. Now, back in 1976, Senator Jacob Javits of New York State, his aide, Harold Rosenthal, gave a lecture in which he exposed the deep state regime of that decade, of that era, 1976, and it wasn't, what, just a few months later, he was mysteriously murdered. And on YouTube, it's called The Hidden Tyranny, The Hidden Tyranny, mm-hmm. Harold Rosenthal. Okay? Now, there's this fellow, Trevor Aronson, who gave a presentation at UCal Berkeley. Let's see, and the TED Talk from that is 16 March 2015. Your brilliant colleague during the day, Chris Hinckley, has aired that several times. And Trevor Aronson, of course, is the author of The Terror Factory, Inside the FBI's Manufactured War on Terror. And he proves, beyond any doubt, that all of these terror events, they are sponsored by the FBI vis-a-vis the use of ex-con informant operatives who recruit, you know, homeless people, et cetera, gang members, whatever, and they set them up to take the fall for some terror event. FBI is allocated and spends $3.3 billion on what they call domestic counterterrorism activity. How is that benefiting us, okay? And then I got to ask you, Mike, when Steve Mnuchin, I think it was the week after inauguration, in response to President Trump's desire to have the fraudulent national debt either repudiated or renegotiated, Mnuchin said, oh, no, we're going to honor it. Well, I guess that's consistent with your phrase money junkies, money zombies, because Mnuchin used to be in the employment of Goldman Satan Sachs, right?
You kind of covered a lot of territory there. I want to get on back here. A lot of people are using the phrase deep state, and it's a bit misleading because it really isn't that deep. It's very easy to see. It's obviously these rogue intelligence agencies. It's the big Wall Street bankers and individual billionaires, the oligarchs, and they have the money to basically shape the country to what they think they want it to be doing. And that's basically all there is to it. That's as deep as it goes. The heads of the intelligence agencies, the top bankers, the top billionaires, that's pretty much it right there. Anyway, listen, I need to let you go here. We're trying to clear the phone lines ahead of the Lady Claire. And before we go to Frank in North Carolina, who will be our last call, apparently one of the reasons we're having issues with cell phone communication and phone lines is everything. The Earth is right now being hit with a coronal mass ejection. I'm looking at the website for the National Association of Amateur Radio, and the Australian Space Forecast Center has issued a warning for today and tomorrow, and that may be what's messing everything up. Okay, let's go to Frank in North Carolina. Frank, what's on your mind?
Yeah, Congressman Walter Jones had stated, I think in more than one radio interview, I think I heard one of them off of Joyce Riley, Power Hour show, that the majority of his colleagues on the Hill, now he's a congressman here out of North Carolina here, the majority of his colleagues on the Hill were controlled through blackmail, and he knew this for a fact. I'm just wondering, shouldn't there be some kind of a law against that? maintaining your office in the government, knowing that you are being controlled through blackmail for, you're being controlled by the blackmailers for the interests of the blackmailers, be a foreign power or whatever.
How would you enforce such a law? I mean, the whole point of being blackmailed is whatever it is you've done is still secret. Only you and the blackmailer know it, so you have a major enforcement problem. It isn't until the blackmailer finally leaks the information or something else happens that we understand this particular politician is being blackmailed. We may actually have a government where, in order to rise above a certain level, you have to do something that you can be blackmailed for. Go off to some resort and have sex with barnyard animals on videotape, and then once they have that videotape, well, by golly, you're reliable, you're dependable, we can trust you because we can control you, and you will do what you are told to do, and you are now welcome to the higher echelons of power. We had that article that came out the other day saying basically all of government is blackmailing each other, peace through blackmail. And we know that there's been a lot of that going on with the Bush-Clinton duopoly as well. That's a reality. And it would be nice if we could find a way to prevent that in order to keep our government subservient to the will of the people rather than to the money junkies and the blackmailers. But it's a good idea in theory. Enforcement's going to be a problem. Okay?
Okay, thanks.
All righty, so that was Frank. All right, we're going to close the phone lines for a little bit and try and get some news fit in here. As you know, there's a lot of congressional investigations going on right now. Congress is asking some very important questions. And apparently, James Runcie, who's the chief operating officer of the Office of Federal Student Aid, and he's one of the Obama holdovers, was asked to testify before Congress, instead chose to resign. So, and again, one of Trump's biggest mistakes coming into the White House was trying to be magnanimous in victory and keeping all of these Obama holdovers, and he did not understand, in the world of politics, people whose paycheck you are signing are not, usually not loyal to you. They're loyal to somebody else. They're loyal through ideology. They're loyal through past favors. They're being blackmailed to do what they're doing inside. And you definitely need to clean that up. Speaking of doing things that you can be blackmailed for, apparently Prince Andrew has been spared the public embarrassment over this court case coming out of Jeff Epstein's pedophile island. And it has to do with a young lady, Virginia Roberts, who claims that she had sex with Prince Andrew when she was 17, and that was down at Jeff Epstein's island. And apparently British socialite Ghislaine Maxwell was part of Epstein's little inner circle, and it was her job to recruit these very young ladies from Britain and American cities to go on down to the island and do what they were going to do. And Maxwell basically denied that anything had gone on, and Virginia Roberts sued for libel and for Maxwell calling her a liar. And apparently Maxwell had the goods on something, because apparently Ms. Maxwell has now agreed to an out-of-court settlement to Virginia Roberts, and everybody's breathing a sigh of relief that this is now all going to go away. And again, when you look at this kind of a situation where you have this island in the Caribbean, it's got this very nice house, all these underage girls running around doing whatever they're doing, and you go on down there, you have to know there are going to be cameras and microphones all over the place. Why would anybody walk into a trap like that? Now, these days, anything goes wrong, it's blame Russia, blame Russia, blame Russia, and it's starting to get a little bit ridiculous. Apparently, the U.S. government is now accusing Kaspersky Lab, They're a Russian computer security company. They're very, very good. They're the ones who outed the Equation Group as being part of the NSA. So now the U.S. is saying, well, actually, they're guilty of cyber espionage. Everybody using Kaspersky is wide open to spying by the Russians. And several U.S. authorities are now canceling their contracts with Kaspersky Lab. And Kaspersky Lab has come on back saying, we will let you look at the source code and judge for yourself if there are cyber espionage tools in there. Of course, there won't be any interest in doing it. It's just another way of saying, oh, anything Russian is bad. If you're using Kaspersky, you're in cahoots with the Russians. If you're drinking Stoli vodka, you're in cahoots with the Russians. Oh, my. All righty. Turning to the war zones, and I'm not going to have anywhere near enough time to cover all of this stuff. Several U.S. senators, three U.S. lawmakers, are trying to block this $110 billion sale of arms to Saudi Arabia, saying inevitably it will drag the United States more directly into the war in Yemen. Like the U.S. isn't already in there by proxy. Apparently the U.S. is still killing more Syrian civilians than Russia. It's now going on for five straight months. Starting to do polls and surveys all across Europe about the Russian threat, the Russian threat. We've been hearing it nonstop on our corporate media, their corporate media. It's always, Russia's coming to get you, Russia's coming to get you. Well, the latest poll is showing the European people aren't believing their corporate media any more than the American people are believing our corporate media, and basically saying the majority of people, especially in Germany and Italy, they don't believe there's a Russian threat. They don't believe Russia is getting ready to invade Poland and the Baltics. They recognize it's just a lot of nonsense to try and scare the people into supporting a war agenda. And the Europeans are getting as war-weary as the American people are right now. John Kerry is out there on Twitter cautioning the Congress about tinkering with the P5 plus 1 deal, which so far has been working, which is why so many people in the U.S. government, especially Israel, don't like it. Iran is keeping all their promises. And the U.S. keeps looking for reasons not to honor theirs. And now they want to go on back and they want to rewrite the P5 plus 1 deal to include all kinds of defensive weapons that they want to say Iran does not have a right to weapons with which to stop an invasion of their country. And that's ridiculous. Iran's never going to agree to that. Absolutely ludicrous. Okay. Now, here's... we're coming up on a commercial break. There's a very positive story coming out of the Koreas, and we're going to get into it when we come back from these commercials. And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show, and there's a little bit of positive news coming out of the Koreas. Some of it's bad. Apparently, North Korea is dealing with a serious malaria problem. Maybe natural, who knows, maybe covert biological warfare. South Korea has just said that organizations within South Korea that are able to render assistance to North Korea over the malaria problem are going to be allowed to communicate with North Korea. Up until now, there's been absolutely no contact allowed between anybody in South Korea or North Korea other than the ultra top level diplomatic channels. Now they're saying, open up the phone lines, let's deal with the malaria. And politics can wait. It's a very, very positive sign that President Moon Jae-in is really trying to restart the process of reunification, and that would be a really good thing. And finally, coming up on top of the hour break here, I love this story. More and more polls are showing the American people view the corporate media as a bunch of liars. Apparently, two-thirds of Americans now view the corporate media as full of fake news. And we're talking 65% of voters. And that is significant. And it means that regardless of all of our other failures, the independent media has succeeded in one area. We have taken away the government's ability to lie to the American people with impunity. And that is a major, major victory. Because it is through lies, fraud, and deception that we are sent out into wars of conquest. We are defrauded of our wealth. We are cheated of our freedoms and liberties. And the time has come for that to stop. Meanwhile, there's this wonderful little video. CNN's Kate Bolden was literally breaking out, why don't people trust CNN anymore? It's because you lied to us so much. That's why. And that really is the state of the corporate media. They're in serious trouble. They're losing audience. They're losing ad revenues. They've been caught using click bots to click the ads on their own websites to cheat their advertisers. Amazing. CNN's latest piece of disinformation. Remember when the email came on out that showed Loretta Lynch was going to be protecting Hillary Clinton in the email server scam? Now CNN is trying to claim that was actually a document from Russia. It's a Russian fake. And gosh darn, James Comey went along with it even though he knew it was fake. It's all a Russian hoax. Right, CNN. And then you wonder why we are not listening to you anymore. Apparently, Blake Ferentz, we were talking about him before, was being interviewed by CNN's John Berman, saying that the supposed Russian hacking of the DNC email server was actually an inside job. And John Berman just went ballistic, foaming at the mouth. No, that's been discredited, really. It's a Russian hacking. Just trying to keep the narrative going. You can almost smell the panic inside those very expensive newsroom sets. And apparently, a veterans group that went after Sean Hannity is facing a huge backlash from their own membership right now. All right, we're going to take a break for station identification. When we come on back, the lovely Lady Claire will be joining us. Stay tuned. Aloha, America. Welcome back to our show, hour number three. And for those of you watching on BAM User, this gorgeous creature sitting next to me is the lovely Lady Claire, who is joining us for the third hour today. And a little bit of a note, she's also going to be joining us in hour number three on Monday, Memorial Day, as well. So you're going to get a double dose of lady love. All right, what's the first thing you want to talk about?
Well, this is not getting a whole lot of focus. In fact, it's getting no focus at all that I've been able to find. Apparently, Bahrainis from the Kingdom of Bahrain are holding more anti-regime rallies. And this isn't just at the capital. This is all over the country. And it is in protest to the Manama regime's recent bloodshed in the besieged village of Diraz, which is the home to the spiritual leader of the country's Shia majority, Sheikh Isa Qasim. Now, on May 23rd, Bahraini forces raided Diraz, which has been under military siege for almost a year, and stormed into the home of the Sheikh. They killed at least five demonstrators, wounded dozens, and arrested over 280 people, which, ironically enough, took place shortly after a meeting between the U.S. President Donald Trump and Bahraini King Hamad bin Isa Al Khalifa in Riyadh. And, Mike, I've got to ask you, why does this president seem to be so excellent at making such horrifically bad choices in foreign policy in the Middle East? It just gives me nightmares.
Well, I don't think it's Donald Trump. I mean,
yeah,
because we've been seeing the same really bad choices in foreign policy in the Middle East,
yeah,
under president after president after president.
Yep.
And I think the obvious logical conclusion is that our foreign policy, especially in the Middle East, is being dictated from somewhere outside.
Yeah.
You get three guesses who, and the first two will not count.
Right, right. And, you know, in looking at this whole thing, he is now cozied up to one of the worst suppressors of human rights in the region, a.k.a. Saudi Arabia, selling them bombs with which to continue their genocide in Yemen and ultimately start a war against Iran, which has done absolutely nothing to deserve it, except, you know, develop a truly moderate constitutional Muslim democracy and be the alleged existential threat claimed by both Israel and Saudi Arabia.
Oh, but they refuse private central banking, and they refuse to sell their oil for the dollar, and that makes them our enemy.
And the Al Khalifa monarchy in Bahrain, oh, don't get me started. This Sunni monarchy has been relentlessly and devastatingly persecuting peaceful Shia protesters who are advocating for a constitutional monarchy. They've been jailed, tortured into confessions for crimes they didn't commit, convicted by kangaroo courts and given long prison sentences.
Boy, sounds a lot like Guantanamo.
Yeah, and even the first responders who treated these protesters from their injuries and wounds by the Bahraini police have been jailed, tortured, convicted of crimes they did not commit, and committing them to long jail sentences as well.
And they're trying to send a message, you know, when we shoot somebody down in the street, don't you dare try and help them.
Yeah, you know. Now, I have warned the U.S. and Bahraini governments over the years on this blog that if there was no attempt at any kind of political rapprochement between the Sunni monarchy and the Shia citizens of Bahrain, there would be a tipping point. And we may well be looking at that tipping point right now. And it may come at such a price that there will be a violent revolution against the monarchy, and whoever will be in control will be virulently anti-American because we have wholeheartedly supported this wretched, tone-deaf monarchy and its government.
It's a replay of Iran under
yeah.
the Shah.
Yeah.
And then the Iranian people got sick and tired of the Shah, and they kick him on out, and all of a sudden Iran's our enemy. How dare they kick out their puppet ruler?
You know, and I've warned them. nobody's listening, but I've warned them. Oh.
This is a hoax story.
Okay.
That's a hoax story.
All right.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And this might be a good time. We are seeing a flood of newly created online blogs and so-called news sites that are putting out absolutely ridiculous junk stories. They're trying to poison the well and make the independent media and the Internet look kooky. And the particular example, and I'm surprised Claire fell for it, is somebody was putting out this hoax nonsense story that Nancy Pelosi was unhappy that Donald Trump wasn't visiting these other countries in alphabetic order.
It was
and
silly.
It was silly on the face of it, but it's being done because they're desperate to try and discredit the independent media somehow.
And poison the well.
And poison the well so that people will just, you know, wander on back to the warm embrace of CNN, NBC, MSNBC, and so forth.
Right.
Which isn't really going to work, but, you know, it's good money, and they're going to keep on trying to do it. But you do need to be very, very, very careful about some of these really out there headlines and understand that this is an attack from outside to try and undermine the independent media.
Right.
We're literally in a war between the corporate media and the government, the deep state, and those of us here in the independent media who feel that you, the listening, reading public, do have an inherent, natural, inalienable right to the truth.
Yeah. What I'd like to do now is take a look at an incident that happened yesterday. Apparently, Chinese jets came within several hundred feet of a U.S. plane over the South China Sea. The two Chinese J-10 fighter jets came within several hundred feet. Mike, that's close in aviation, isn't
it? That is very, very,
that's
very
close. That's cutting it way too close. It was a Navy P-3 Orion over the South China Sea on Thursday. The fighters flew 200 yards in front of the P-3 maritime surveillance aircraft with an altitude separation of 100 feet. And the encounter was characterized by the commander of the U.S. aircraft, determined to be unsafe and unprofessional. And according to a U.S. official, the Chinese jets were weaving ahead of the American plane, an action that very much concerned the U.S. pilot.
Well, in military protocol, when you have a plane in front of you that's weaving back and forth, it is a sign that you are going someplace you are not supposed to. And again, this goes back to the story we had earlier in the week about how the U.S. sent the USS Dewey within 12 nautical miles of one of these islands. And even the United States recognizes 12 nautical miles represents the territorial waters of a sovereign nation. And so China's point of view is, this is our island. It was given to us after World War II by various treaties, including the Cairo Convention, and the United States does not have a right to go on in there. The United States is out there saying, well, we're going to ignore the convention and all the treaties here and say that they are now disputed because we want to take them away from you.
Yeah.
But again, it's brinksmanship, and if somebody makes a mistake, things are going to get really, really ugly.
Yes.
All right, we're going to take a second here to do a shout-out to our on-air affiliates who are just now rejoining our network.
Okay.
We have the lovely lady Claire with us, and we're talking about
Korea
and
the first test of the ICBM intercept. Preparing for North Korea's growing threat, the Pentagon will try to shoot down an intercontinental range missile for the first time in a test next week. And the goal is to more closely simulate a North Korean ICBM aimed at the U.S. homeland. But this particular interceptor has a lousy track record. succeeding in 9 of 17 attempts since 1999. The most recent test in June 2014 was a success, but that followed 3 straight failures. And
this is an outgrowth of the old Reagan Star Wars.
Yes, yeah. And my thought is, Mike, and I'd like your input on this, what is the U.S. military actually able to do about the interceptor's miserable failure rate? To me, that's miserable.
Oh, they'll just say, well, if we spend more money on it, it will eventually work somehow. I mean, that's the thinking behind the F-35.
Yeah.
Interception of any incoming projectile mm-hmm. is very, very tricky. And again, with a failure rate like that, all an enemy needs to do is simply shoot more missiles.
Yeah.
And at least one will get through. So
yeah.
It becomes a numbers game. If you go on down and you look, for example, at the first Iraq War, and we were all told about the amazing success of the Patriot interceptor. It was
mm-hmm.
better than 95%. And then after it was all over, the Pentagon kind of shuffled its feet and said, well, actually, it was only about 50%. Other experts looked at the data and said it was even worse than that. And because Saddam was accused of having biological weapons in those Scud missiles, which was another lie,
mm-hmm.
People pointed out that even intercepting those missiles, the biological weapons were still going to come down somewhere. And we've seen a lot of these failures. Israel's Iron Dome, every time somebody fires a bottle rocket out of Gaza into Israel,
mm-hmm.
they'll fire off 10, 15 of those Iron Dome missiles trying to hit it, and they can't because the bottle rocket's just weaving back and forth.
Yeah.
And those rockets are expensive, but that's okay. Israel isn't paying for them. You are.
Right, right. Speaking of Israel, the UN is sounding the alarm over conditions for Palestinian prisoners. And they are expressing concern for Palestinians in custody, expressing alarm over reports of punitive measures by Israeli authorities against hundreds of prisoners who are on a hunger strike so far for at least 40 days so far. Now, there are more than 1,500 prisoners who launched the action on April 17th to press for an end to administrative detention and solitary confinement, as well as longer and more regular family visits, landlines, better health care.
So something you need to understand here,
yeah.
when they talk about administrative detention, that means Israel has grabbed these people and locked them up
mm-hmm.
without any indications they've committed a crime.
Yeah.
They've not had a trial. They've not had
no
legal
due
representation.
Process. Yeah.
It is simply Israel saying, lock that person up.
Yeah. And I'm kind of wondering about this, and I wanted to bounce it off you. When some of these men start to die, and some of them will, even with the best intentions and the nasogastro feeding tube down their throats, the Palestinian blowback against Israel may take a very dark and violent turn. Is that what Israel wants to have happen as an excuse for even more scraping out of Gaza with bombs and assassinations?
Well, that could be, but then anytime Israel wants to attack Gaza, they just have one of their agents in
mm-hmm.
Gaza fling one of those bottle rockets across into an empty lot,
mm-hmm.
and they will uncork what they're going to do. What I would like to see is more world attention focused on this rather than just Gaza. Gaza
yes.
already knows what it's like to be living
yeah.
under Israel's apartheid
right.
domination. But the world really needs to start standing up to Israel. And they are beginning to. The boycott, divestment, sanctions movement is still growing across the globe.
Mm-hmm.
Israel's very worried. It is costing them money. And that's why Israel's trying to lobby governments to ban opposition to Israel's treatment of the Palestinians, claiming that opposition to Israel's actions somehow represents anti-Semitism. No, it is opposition to Israel's behavior.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And this, in most judicial practices, the idea of secret information and indefinite detention, it doesn't exist in civilized countries.
Yeah.
It should be unacceptable against Palestinian prisoners as well.
There should be no more star chambers.
Yeah,
anywhere.
Exactly. I'd like to go over to the stories that we've been hearing about the Saudi arms deal, which is all over, said to be over $300 billion over the next 10 years. And the news of the deal came as Trump was doing his Donald of Arabia impression. And, sorry, couldn't help myself there.
I can yeah. almost picture him in
yeah,
the
robes.
White robe.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know.
And most of the reports on the lamestream prostitute media don't talk about who these weapons are going to be engineered. And the reality is, folks, these weapons are going to be used to complete the Saudi genocide in Yemen. And ultimately, the U.S. and Israel are planning to use Saudi Arabia as a proxy force for a war against the Iranians.
Now, I would like to remind everybody mm-hmm. that not too long ago, the U.S. government used Iraq mm-hmm. as a proxy force for a war against the Iranians.
Yes.
Didn't work out very well. Mm-hmm. And Saudi Arabia ought to take a good look at what Iraq is like today
yeah.
before committing along that course of action.
Mm-hmm. But, of course, here, the gorilla napping splayed out over the Bösendorfer grand piano is Russia. Now, Russian and civilian military leadership has consistently promised that if Iran gets attacked militarily, Russia will come to its aid. And, you know, I'm sitting here looking at this and thinking, a war against Russia over Iran? And I'm sorry, but this potential scenario is just about as serious as is a heart attack. And, Michael, my assessment is that it may be coming sooner rather than later.
They're going to have to get the war going yeah. before the economy starts
yeah.
falling apart, and experts are saying that's going to happen this year.
Yeah.
And the goal is war with Russia and China,
mm-hmm.
Whether it's over Iran or North Korea. Those are just the excuse.
Yeah.
Roosevelt goaded Japan into attacking the United States at Pearl Harbor, not because he wanted war with Japan, but because that was his backdoor to the ultimate goal, war against Germany.
Yes.
And the same situation is happening here as well. Ultimately, this is a war. The clash of civilizations is a war between banking systems, between
mm-hmm.
private central banking and state banking,
yep.
and against the rising threat of the ruble and the yuan against the global economic hegemonic domination of the U.S. Federal Reserve note, because more and more countries and businesses are seeing the ruble and the yuan as being stable as compared to the highly volatile U.S. Federal Reserve note.
Mm-hmm.
And they're turning away from wanting to use the U.S. dollar for global trade and banking.
Yeah.
And right now, with our manufacturing in decline and nobody wanting our GMO agriculture, siphoning wealth from the rest of the world through usury on
mm-hmm.
that Federal Reserve note
yep.
is almost the only thing left holding up Wall Street.
Yeah. And it really is annoying me that President Trump has thrown the U.S. lot in with a country with so vile a human rights record that it makes Attila the Hun look downright compassionate in comparison. I'm still kind of gobsmacked.
Well, unfortunately, in the expediency of war, I mean,
mm-hmm.
look at what's going on over at Qatar and the human
oh,
rights
yeah.
violations there. But
yeah.
The U.S. will make a big scream about human rights violations if it's a country they want to target.
Yeah.
But if it's a country that is going along with the U.S. agenda, doesn't matter if they're committing egregious human rights violations against their own people.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's all about building that sphere of influence, our sphere of influence versus all them other people.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And another story that is, again, getting no attention. Apparently, Iraqi troops are torturing and executing civilians, and this has been documented in secret videos. And ironically, these are officers of an elite Iraqi Special Forces unit, praised by U.S. military commanders earlier this year for its role in fighting ISIS, directed the torture and execution of civilians in Mosul, and at least six distinct incidents got on tape. Apparently, these Iraqi military personnel learned and absorbed the lessons of Abu Ghraib very well.
And that's exactly what it is. It's
yeah.
blowback.
Yeah.
Because once the U.S. went down that path of torture,
mm-hmm.
It's going to come back. It's,
yeah.
It's going to come back at you.
Yeah. And, of course, the Iraqi government is vehemently denying, and Iraqi's interior minister has issued a video to prove that the torture claims are incorrect. But unfortunately, Mike, there are way too many eyewitness accounts of this to be happening, and for it not to be true. Let's go over to Mosul and the struggle for the city there. Well, the U.S. has finally admitted killing at least, and I like the at least line in there, 105 civilians in a Mosul strike, and accuses ISIS of placing explosives in the building.
This is called the mommy they made us do it
yeah,
excuse.
Yeah, right.
You know, yes, we killed civilians,
yeah.
but ISIS was there. They were doing bad things.
Yeah, and this casualty count is probably very conservatively stated to try to make CENTCOM look as though the collateral damage wasn't that bad. And, of course, there is no proof offered to the claim that ISIS had loaded the building with explosives. They've got nothing.
I mean, that's it.
Hello?
Basically, they're
yeah.
trying to say, no, we didn't bomb that building. ISIS
yeah.
rigged it with explosives to make it look like we were bombing their building. Boy,
yeah.
are they making up this stuff with a dartboard?
I think so.
Yeah,
I think so,
yeah.
Okay. Going back to Syria, apparently the United States has bombed an East Syrian village for second day in a row, over 115 non-combatants killed. And the numbers in Syria have been soaring, and that today's attack killed a lot of ISIS family members is likely to add questions, particularly as apparently President Trump has openly advocated killing family members of terrorists as part of the war, complaining that the lack of family killing amounted to a very politically correct war. Well, that's one thing President Trump won't be accused of, given the number of civilians he's killed.
Somebody once said when they were discussing the conduct of war,
mm-hmm.
you know, why do we have rules of warfare? And there was a commander, I forget who it was, who basically... Oh, we got to take a break.
And I'd like to finish.
Yeah, we'll finish that.
Okay.
I'll be
yeah.
right back.
Okay.
Hi, America. Welcome back to the show. And so we're talking about the rules of war and why they exist. And the story goes that a soldier was asking his commander, why do we have all these rules about war that seem to protect the enemy? And the commander said, the rules of war do not exist to protect the enemy. The rules of war exist to protect you, the soldier, so that when this is all over, you get to walk away knowing that you did what was required of you to do, and you did not do anything that you should feel bad about, so that it haunts you for the rest of your life, as we have seen going on with veterans,
with
our veterans who didn't comply with the rules of war. We, the American people, who are being asked to support the war, we want the same thing. We want to believe that the wars are just, that they only target the enemy, that we are not killing civilians, that we are not torturing innocent Iraqis to find nuclear weapons that never existed, because that allows us to leave the war with a clean conscience. We don't have that anymore. We, the American people, even though it is very obvious following last year's elections that we are impotent to change the nation's war policy, we still feel that stain of all these things the U.S. government has been doing, concentration camps, torture centers, executions of civilians, bombing of civilian infrastructure. It makes us all look collectively like war criminals, and that's kind of a bad thing here.
Yeah, I was thinking about President Trump's advocacy of the assassination of family members of ISIS, including, I would imagine, women, children, and the medically fragile elderly. And this very much reminded me of the statement made by the papal legate overseeing the papal war against the Cathars at the siege of Montségur in France. When the guy was informed that women and children were also holed up with the men being besieged, his response was, "Kill them all. God will find his own." I find that chilling.
Well, I find it very chilling. And here's,
yeah.
here's a moment of caution.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Donald Trump is saying it's okay to kill the family members of our enemies.
Mm-hmm.
That could come back to haunt him.
Yes.
Because Americans are now seen as the enemies of these other countries, and Trump has just told them it's okay to go after his family. And I don't think he wants to go there. And he may not have thought this all the way through.
Yeah, I don't think he did. You know, and it's unfortunate. Apparently, I'd like to go to technology now. Microsoft is warning of an Orwellian future as WikiLeaks exposes participation with surveillance. Why am I not surprised?
Well, we've known Microsoft
yeah.
has been hand
yeah.
in hand with the NSA
yeah.
going back
yeah.
to the NSA key in their encryption
yeah.
infrastructure.
But recently there's been an installment of WikiLeaks Vault 7 documents that came to light that exposed two CIA malware programs that specifically infect Microsoft computers with the purpose of carrying out tasks on infected computers, checking for scheduled events and collecting data. You know,
here's the payoff right
yeah.
here. The suspicion is, and again, this goes back to the NSA key scandal,
right?
Is that users of Microsoft products are concerned that Microsoft is willingly working with CIA and NSA,
mm-hmm.
And is providing these openings within the system through which the CIA and NSA malware can operate. And, of
mm-hmm.
course, now we're feeling the pain for that because these recent ransomwares that are out there, WannaCry,
oh,
WannaCrypt,
yeah.
and
yeah.
the rest of them, are built on these leaked NSA cyber tools.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the damage that's being done around the world, they should have been locking up these cyber weapons with the same security that they used to guard the nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
And instead, they're just letting them lie around on flash drives.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're out there, and they're being used to cause all kinds of mayhem here in the world.
Cyber karma.
Yes.
Yeah. Apparently, there have been some developments regarding the Boston Marathon bombing. The father of a Chechen killed by FBI sues over his son's 2013 death. The family of Ibrahim Todashev, who was shot at least six times by an FBI agent in his Orlando apartment during what was supposed to be a routine interrogation in May of 2013, is suing federal and state parties they believe to be responsible for the man's death. Now, Todashev, who was believed to be an acquaintance of the Boston Marathon bomber, Tamerlan Sanyev, was shot dead during this interrogation in which he was questioned about the terror attack and possible involvement in the 2011 murder.
Okay, we got to take a break here.
Okay.
And then we'll come right
back. All
right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. So we're talking about Ibrahim Todashev's father is now filing a lawsuit against the FBI over what appeared to be the execution killing of his son, who was being interviewed by the FBI, by which we mean the FBI was trying to convince him to turn state's evidence and lie to help sell the story of the Boston Marathon bombing, or the official myth of the Boston bombing. And, of course, the FBI claimed that Todashev threw a coffee table at them, tried to whack them with a broom. It turned out after the fact, Todashev actually had a knee injury. He was in a brace and had serious mobility issues at the time. And you need to remember all the other times it's come on out that the FBI will fraudulently manufacture testimony or evidence to support the official story, of course going all the way back to Vince Foster. How they tried to manufacture Lisa Foster's recognition of the gun found with Vince Foster's body, but they showed her a different gun, a silver-colored one. We had all these cases where the FBI was trying to coerce testimony in the Oklahoma City bombing, and it's just part of the pattern here. And so it looks like they were trying to get Ibrahim to help incriminate the Tsarnaev brothers in this triple homicide, where there is no evidence that they were involved whatsoever, other than the fact that they had known the murder victim, casually, tangentially.
Yeah.
And apparently Todashev said, no, I'm not going to lie for you, and in fact I'm going to go out and tell everybody that you're trying to get me to lie. And at that point, he was killed. And it's not unlike that story that came out just a week ago, where a hacker who has been arrested in Europe was approached. His lawyer is saying he was approached by the FBI and told that if he would basically say that he was hacking the DNC on behalf of Russia, that the FBI would get the charges dropped, they'd give him a bunch of money, they'd bring him to the United States and make him a citizen.
Right.
So this is what the FBI really does.
Yeah.
And they apparently were trying to do it down there in Florida, and it got completely out of control.
Yeah. I'd like to kind of revisit the Manchester bombing from earlier this week. Apparently, security services missed five opportunities to stop this guy, and he was repeatedly flagged to the authorities as an extremist, but not stopped. And that emerged Wednesday night.
Wasn't even being surveilled.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, this guy reeks of controlled asset, undercover operative.
And I have a couple of thoughts on this, and I'd like to share them with our audience. The first is that MI5 is a bunch of incompetent, professionally impotent imbeciles. Also, the second possibility is that the British deep state wanted something like this to happen to numb their citizens to more of these events taking place and use the crisis to justify even more draconian surveillance and a death grip on the internet in the UK.
And by the way, the two are not mutually exclusive. Could have been a false flag attack. Doesn't mean MI5 aren't a bunch of goofballs.
Yes. And post-Manchester, she also wants to ban...
Theresa
May wants to ban cryptography outright. Tories say they'll exploit the Manchester's dead to ban working crypto in the U.S.
UK.
UK. I'm sorry. The third reason would be to create support for further...
Yeah, that's a K.
Yes, I know.
That's
rented
like
eyeballs.
This.
So sorry. The third reason would be to create support for further British military intervention in the Middle East. And attacks like this have become the cost of doing business for the financial empires involved in many Middle Eastern countries. And the U.S. and the U.K. are also very much complicit. And, Mike, the cycle goes like this. Publicly accusing a country of something it didn't do, like Saddam Hussein's allegedly having weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, invading, assassinating, and regime-changing its government, making sure it is as Western-centric as possible, occupy, expropriate resources to which the invaders have utterly no moral right, and sell those resources in only appropriate currencies to appropriate countries. Repeat. Now, I want everyone listening and watching to understand this. I would never condone this horrific act. As a Christian witness and Christian pacifist, I condemn all violence, and my prayers and my thoughts are with all the victims of this attack, their families and their friends. But that being said, I have to observe that those in the bowels of power in both the U.S. and the U.K. seem to magically believe, Mike, that ultimately their wars of occupation and plunder will not create a reaction in those people whose families have been maimed and displaced, disowned, thrown into abject poverty through regime change and war, and no longer have any control of their countries anymore. Also, there is another magical belief for those in the bowels of power in the West, who believe as an absolute article of faith that these people have no right to the rage and emotional injury they are feeling at these actions which have been taken against them, their brother and sister citizens. Until, of course, we get a terrible incident like Manchester. And let's call
on the assumption that it was a genuine act of terror and not a false flag.
Right. And I think we need to call this by its proper name if, in fact, it was an act that was not a false flag. Blowback. In the face of empires who are too busy counting and acquiring the spoils of war, to care what is done to the people of those countries where the spoils of war are coming from.
Well, that's what war, the people who love war are all about, their own greed and power, and they are oblivious to the suffering that they cause. In fact, I'm sure they consider any sympathy for the targeted population as a sign of weakness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another little article about Syria that I found today in Blacklisted News. It's a very sober site, and I have a lot of respect for it. Apparently, what's going on is that the U.S. has pressed NATO to let the NATO organization join its fight against ISIS. Now, the single NATO members were already part of the U.S. coalition, but NATO as an organization brings large-scale command and control capabilities, as well as additional resources, all under U.S. control.
Okay, well, there's a problem there. Basically, when you understand, and Syria is the example, where the U.S. screams, ISIS is there, therefore we can attack.
Yeah.
They're trying to get all of NATO to basically sign on to be part of the U.S. Conquering hordes.
Yeah.
And I think NATO would be well advised not to get involved in that. Certainly the people of the NATO nations do not want that. But the NATO leadership, of course, they're military people, and they see any opportunity for more war is an opportunity for more money, more promotion, more medals.
And what I'm seeing here is that a larger regional, if not world war, is coming. Now, we have been, as you have said, and I agree with you, Mike, in the opening phases of that war for some time now, even though few will actually acknowledge it. And what this reminds me of is the second Sherlock Holmes movie, A Game of Shadows, where the evil Moriarty makes the observation that war is coming, and he has the lock on both the bullets and the bandages. So it is with the West military-industrial complex, which metaphorically, I think, has punctured President Trump's throat, swallowed, sucked up whatever morality he had before he took his oath of office, and replaced it with the pure, immoral venom. Again, that President Trump has, you know, signed off on cozy relationships with Saudi Arabia, and this is so wrong, you know, on so many levels, I can't even begin to articulate. But, Mike, there is utterly no doubt in my mind that some of those arms will be used to finish the Saudis' ongoing genocide in Yemen, then be used in Iran, which is both Saudi Arabia and Israelis' alleged existential threat in the region. Why? because since the revolution in 79, it has become a moderate, flourishing constitutional Islamic republic, where even the rights of religious minorities are protected and its people are succeeding.
And remember, little historical fact here. Mm-hmm. Iran has not initiated a war of conquest against another country in over 200 years. It is not in their nature. And it certainly has not launched a war of aggression against anybody, including Israel and Saudi Arabia, mm-hmm. since the Iranian Revolution of 1979.
Right.
Now, again, forget about who's screaming that is being aggressive or destabilizing or the rest of it. Just take a scorecard. Who has been attacking who? Who has been drone striking who?
Yeah.
Who has been bombing who? Who's mm-hmm. been staging coup d'etats against other countries? We know who the aggressors are.
Yeah.
And it's not Iran, it's not Russia, it's not China.
No. And let's not forget that just this week, because Israel's government got a little antsy over the Saudi deal, so what did President Trump do? He just okayed another $75 million more for Israeli defense, over and above the $38 billion 10-year deal signed in December of last year.
Well, no matter what happens, you know, Israel's got to get the vigorous. We get the little vigorous going here.
Yeah. You know, so in conclusion, I give you President Donald Moriarty Trump, who firmly believes war is good for business because our weapons, as you've said, are the only things people from other countries want to buy. So war is what he's going to have. But what concerns me, and you and I have talked about this, is that the U.S. and its allies may not win this war, particularly against Russia. This country does not have the troop strength, the weaponry, the money, or the manufacturing to ensure victory in a conventional war against Russia. And that, Mike, is the scary part.
Well, because if it goes nuclear, everybody loses, except
mm-hmm.
the bankers, of course. The bankers are going to be looking at the wreckage of human civilization mm-hmm. saying, oh, wow, look at all those borrowers now. They're going to have to borrow huge amounts to rebuild planet Earth. And
mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah. There was another article that I found to be painfully ironic. Okay. And apparently the wall around Obama's D.C. compound is now complete.
Walls are bad for everybody else,
yeah.
but my wall is good. Apparently over in Chicago, around Obama's house there, now that he's out of office, the neighborhood is saying, we've got to take down all the barricades and everything that were around Obama's Chicago house because it's interfering with traffic. Apparently there's a church on the block there where people are having trouble getting in and out of the church as well.
Yeah.
And they would like all the Secret Service stuff to go away.
Yeah.
And yes, former presidents are entitled to Secret Service protection that continues after their term in office.
Mm-hmm.
But for somebody who was so supportive of the open borders policy, Obama is definitely putting up a lot of walls around himself.
I find the irony and hypocrisy incredible. And apparently he's been in Europe while Donald Trump has been in Europe. I think in Obama's mind he believes that he is fronting a government in exile somehow against Donald Trump.
He does act like that.
Yeah.
He does act like that.
And he was sitting alongside German Chancellor Angela Merkel, and he was lecturing the current administration about its immigration policy Thursday. And while not mentioning President Trump by name, Obama made clear to whom he was leveling his criticism. In this new world that we live in, we can't isolate ourselves, he said. We can't hide behind a wall. And yet, that is exactly what Obama is doing in his Washington, D.C. and Chicago homes, you know. And here's the coup de grace. The government in exile, the real one, according to the media, has had a busy week at home and abroad. President Obama has given up leading from behind and presumes now to lead from overseas. His Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, has a new mission.
Wait, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton? Oh, okay,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, as missionary to the safe spaces where snowflakes fall. Mr. Obama joined German Chancellor Angela Merkel in Berlin to lecture Americans and the West to quit being so beastly to the strivers of the Third World and open the wider borders of the West. I think this is, you know, and the timing, right after the bombing in Manchester, How in the name of heaven, Mike, could he make those statements knowing people were dead and bleeding?
He's pushing the agenda, the globalist agenda. That's what he's being paid to do.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the end of your talking point.
Well, not quite.
Okay.
Apparently, this is the start of Ramadan.
Yes.
And I would like to offer greetings to all of our Muslim listeners and viewers, wherever you may be. And there was a crawl on Fox a little bit earlier saying that ISIS is declaring war on the West and advocating for all sorts of violence against us.
Uh-oh, get ready for another false flag.
Yeah, and they had in the video an image of Las Vegas being blown up this weekend. Okay, can't get more obvious than that, can you?
No, you can't get more obvious than that.
Yeah.
Well, could be, I mean, between Ramadan and the Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
But if they're going to get these wars going, unfortunately, the sad reality is they need something really big and scary and nasty.
That makes 9/11 look like nothing.
Yeah. Crash the plane into a building, been there, done that, didn't buy the T-shirt.
Nope.
So.
It's, if you have plans, I would suggest that people maybe think about staying home with their loved ones and having a barbecue rather than going into urban large, clogged urban areas this weekend. I'm just saying.
Yeah. It's terrible to live like this where you're afraid your own government is going to carry out some kind of a bombing or atrocity and use your bloody body to push the war agenda. But it does happen.
Yeah.
Roosevelt willingly allowed those sailors in Pearl Harbor to be killed in this attack that he provoked from Japan in order to scream it was a surprise attack and use their bloody shirts to get us into World War II.
Yeah.
Just as Woodrow Wilson used the bloody shirts from the Lusitania
to
get us all into World War I. These are how these things get done.
Yeah.
And if we are to believe these financial experts who are saying the economy is not going to hold together much longer, it's already coming apart. They're just able to hide it from you.
Yeah.
They're going to have to get these wars going before the economy comes apart, or there will be no support for the war with an economy that's absolutely in ruin.
Yeah, yeah. And they're saying by the fall, right? Between summer and fall, at least that's what I'm reading.
That's what I'm reading as well here.
Yeah,
But again, we know the economy's in terrible, terrible shape. Just walk down your local main street and look at the deteriorated condition. Look at all the homeless and hungry.
Yeah,
we are definitely an empire in decline, and my concern is that in its death throes, it may decide to take the rest of the world with it.
That's the really scary part.
Yeah.
That's the really scary part.
What we need is hospice care for dying empires.
Oh, that sounds good. I love that.
Lock them in a nice dark room, shoot them full of relaxing drugs, and just let them go quietly and not take anybody else with them.
How do we get them into the dark room?
We'll just leave some money around the floor. Oh, money! We'll go for it.
Oh, my goodness.
Or underage interns or something like that.
Yeah.
Bottles of booze. Are we allowed to lure politicians with bottles of booze?
I think it's been done. I mean, Washington did it.
He owned a distillery. He sold it.
Okay. Yes, yeah.
All right, we're going to take another break for commercials. Mm-hmm. Back with the last segment of our program today after these few words. Hi, America. Welcome back to the show. Last segment of our program on this Palhana Friday going to the Memorial Day weekend. And Claire has a few comments and thoughts she wants to share on that topic.
Yeah. I want to do a shout out to all veterans who listen to us and watch us and know that we have a complete, utter respect for you. It's just when your civilian leaders do things that maybe they shouldn't, we're not mad at you. We're angry at them. You're responsibility is to do your mission the best you can. And we understand that. And we want to know, we want to tell you that we know that you are many times very skilled, highly technical people that do the best job. Mike?
Well, again, as I said at the top of the show, the social expectation for Memorial Day is you're going to drink copious amounts of beer and go out to the beach and, you know, it's the official start of summer, even though summer actually began back on the 20th, and we still had snow on the ground in Montana.
Yeah.
But do take a moment to sit back and think about what the holiday is supposed to represent, which is that we do honor and remember those who lost their lives in the numerous wars that the United States has had throughout its history. And ask yourself, for what did these brave people actually die for? And were they actually dying for what they were told, or was it for some other dark purpose? Were they just callously being used as playing chips in a great game for wealth and power across the globe? Like most families, I have a lot of military in my background. My grandfather, Walt Smith, was a hero in World War I. He was awarded the Croix de Guerre, which is France's equivalent of the Congressional Medal of Honor. He would never wear it, and he went to his grave refusing to tell us what he was awarded for. Wouldn't talk about it at all. And it's a reminder of the heavy price that those who serve in war carry, even if they come back mostly intact and go on to have other lives. And you have to ask, why is all this death and suffering taking place? Does it really serve a high and noble purpose that we can all be collectively proud of? And I think the American people are starting to realize, looking back over the last 16 years, the answer is no. Americans cannot feel good about all these wars and interventions, can't feel proud about them, can't feel proud about the government or the nation as a whole. We are shamed by the actions of our leadership that seems to think war is the solution to every problem that they come across. Not because it's right or just or moral, but simply because they can get away with it. Until somebody finally is going to stand up and put a stop to it. Right now we are starting to see much of the rest of the world outside the U.S. Influence starting to build those alliances and allegiances. And it's a very, very dangerous time. And again, if it goes nuclear, nobody wins but the bankers.
Yeah. And, you know, in looking at these last 16 years, I realized that a teenage kid who is 16 has never known the United States as being in a state of peace.
Hardly any of us ever have, but yes, we've been in Afghanistan 16 years.
Yep.
It's time to call it quits. All right, there's the music. We're going to get on out of here. Have a good weekend. Enjoy yourself. Drive safely. Don't drink too much. We will be back live on Monday, Memorial Day, with the Lady Claire. Aloha, America.